Fred Film Radio.
Joining me on the Big Fred Tuesday is the director of a new provocative documentary titled A Man and a Camera, screening at CPH Docs. From the Netherlands, it's director Guido Hendricks. Guido, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So Guido, just briefly to introduce the film that we will be talking about, the premise is very simple but intriguing and provocative, and it kind of finds you silently pointing a camera at a number of people and seeing how they react. And you especially do so standing at their doorway. So this is just a very simple introduction for our listeners who don't know the film yet, just so they will know what we will be talking about. But very simple. To start us off, my question to you is, where did that idea come from?
Yeah, it actually has quite a long history, you could say. It was just one day I started to randomly film people on the street in silence. And you can say I was looking for an adventure back then. It was about, 7-8 years ago in the streets of Belgium. I was still studying a film school back then. And I decided I had this material. I put it aside for a few years and then I started to revisit it. And then I was somehow intrigued by, the tension and strange drama that existed in these encounters, and also a little bit the underlying power relationship between the one behind and the front of the lens. And this is something I like to explore a bit further. So from that point, I took the project on in a more serious manner.
But I seem to understand that, yes, the origins of this project was very spontaneous.
It was very spontaneous. It was during a week, and then every day you got like a little assignment to do, and then I don't know exactly what was the exact trigger that started me like doing this. And also back then it was a bit, in that sense you could say, problematic, because I was more stalking people on the street. I didn't really give them a chance to escape, and that's when I began conceptualizing the film. So years later, then I started to appear on people's doorstep. And this was like, it was a way to, on the one hand, limit, you could say, the arena, to have a consistent arena, and also to give them a possibility to escape. Because of course, when the door opens, they could close it immediately if they were not interested.
Did you think that you knew how they would react to the camera? Were you expecting anything in particular in their reaction?
No, from the very start, not really. Of course, when I started to extend on the project and to I filmed in almost all places, or like all remote places in the Netherlands. I traveled through the whole country doing this, and then of course after a while, when you get more and more reactions and you go to more, you meet more and more people in this disguise, you could say. Yeah, then you start to have some predictions, but from the very start, not really.
And just out of curiosity, you mentioned that you went to different places in the Netherlands, right, to film this documentary.
Yeah.
So do you see this as specifically an observation on Dutch society, or do you see its scope more universal?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think to a certain extent it does say something about Dutch society, but then at the same time I have to admit it's not like this sociological aspect is not really something that I focused on. So it's not that I very systematically filmed in this and this kind of neighborhood, you know, exactly from upper to lower class. I think both aspects are in the film. I went to all different like social class places in the Netherlands, but still, it does show it does say something about the society, but also I think like the whole concept is very simple in that sense, and you could do it anywhere in the world. It would be something I would be interested in, like what would happen if you would do this in North America or Africa or any place.
So you mentioned power relations in an earlier answer, and this exploration of power relations is something that I also noticed in your previous film, Stranger in Paradise, where newly arrived refugees learn lessons about the way Europe is, essentially. Do you find that the two films are correlated in that sense too?
I mean, yeah, regarding that manner, they are. I mean, I think I'm always interested in power relations, but I think this one is more explicitly focusing on the power relations between, yeah, you could say the one behind and in front of the camera lens. I think especially in documentary filmmaking, yeah, you could say there is some kind of inherent exploitative aspect if you of course portray people, and it's something if you are become aware of it, you can of course make sure that you're not exploiting the people you portray, of course, but of course there is, you have a certain power. It's also what I felt, I think, every time I went to people to film them in this way. I also had to persuade myself, because and it was not very easy to do, I have to say. I felt like a certain necessity, and I did also feel this you could say exhilarating mixture between shame and power. So I felt powerful behind the camera when I didn't say a word, and they had to in a certain way show themselves. And
And you're not a tyrant, so you didn't enjoy menacing people in that way.
No, it's not. No, I didn't enjoy it, but I did feel though this mixture between shame and power, but I think that is also what increases the tension, because there's also certain resistance from my side. I think it's not necessarily bad, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like A Man and a Camera is a film where you kind of push the limit of where you could go, to the point where it almost becomes difficult or uncomfortable to watch. I think, you know, in your projects, do you also consider or question maybe the role of spectators within a viewing experience too?
Very much, I think. I think for me, this is something that's from the starting point of a basic idea until the last day in sound design and in the mix, I'm always thinking about to what place will the spectator be moved. So not necessarily that I want to decide or manipulate him exactly to a certain place, or his imagination, you could better say, but I'm always thinking of trying to be in the position of the spectator. So try to be a spectator myself and try to look at the film in this way, what happens when I watch this, and what questions does it raise? That's always something I'm thinking about.
And just to follow up on that, what are the films that you are most drawn to as a spectator?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, it's, I think it's a very broad, I think from when I started to get interested in filmmaking, I think Michael Haneke was really one of the people that triggered me a lot. But yeah, Ray Gadas more recently, I think it's a filmmaker that I think makes amazing things. But also, of course, all the work of people, Fellini, etc. Ruben Östlund also.
Right.
Yeah.
And Guido, considering the nature of your documentary and how unexpected some of the reactions you got from the people you were filming were, how would you explain the impact of your camera and the reactions it garnered from the people you were filming?
Yeah, it's again a good question. I would say, of course, the camera, it plays a role. It plays a big part. And it's, you know, that's also when I would also, you know, when you would ask me to define the film in one sentence, I would say that it explores ways in which we can relate to a video camera, but also to the unknown. And when I say the unknown, that more relates, I think, to me as a person. Like, a complete stranger, someone you don't know. You don't know what he's going to do. So yeah, like the unexpected, and it's hard to distinguish. It's one entity in that sense in the film. So
I was thinking as well specifically that it probably wouldn't have happened if you just walked in with your iPhone or something, just filming the people. But the fact that your camera does seem professional, from what I could tell, maybe legitimized you in a sense.
It's true. I think a certain amount of people would exactly think like you describe it in this way. Okay, it's a professional, you know, it's someone who I can probably trust to a certain extent because he has a professional camera. But it can also be very, like, too intriguing or you know, too oppressing, this camera. And maybe others would say, oh, an iPhone is maybe a bit more low-key. I don't know. It could maybe go either way. But
Are you concerned about things like surveillance? I mean, after all, surveillance has been a big part of human rights discourse for quite some time now, especially recently.
Yeah, I think it's something that we should be really aware of, and it's not, I mean, I don't know exactly the English word, but in the Netherlands we say it seems like a fight that's almost already been fought, you know, like there are people standing up against it. It's something that should be done a lot more, because it's like, if you like this in terms of privacy and these things, it's I think it's not a good development, I would say.
So you are definitely not on the side that thinks that it would improve people's security. They would have to let go of too much of their freedom.
No, yeah, exactly. I think that's just the security argument. It's for me, it's like the idea of security. Yeah, I would say, but no real security. That's what I think.
And it's interesting how cameras, what role they have in society in general, right? Because right now I'm sitting in front of my laptop and I got a camera on it, and I don't know whether someone is looking at me.
Yeah,
probably not, because I'm not that different. But I'm not that interesting. I don't claim to be that interesting that I can be spied on. I've got nothing in particular to hide. But then also, you know, when I'd be walking down the street and maybe someone is filming me or something, cameras have become so accessible to the point where now they just play a very important role in the social fabric, you know, in the structure of our very lives, don't you think?
Yeah, it's very true. I think there's a certain, you could say, over familiarity of cameras. And that's, I think maybe that did play a part in this film, that I did try to go to places where that over familiarity of cameras was less present. So a little bit the more remote places where it's a bit more spontaneous how the people relate to a camera there. I remember in the film there's also one scene of a young boy who just, it seems like it's the first time he sees a camera in his life. And when his mother comes, she's also in the house, and then she shows her face just for 2 seconds, and she is really, what is happening here, you know?
That is amazing. That is an amazing scene. It almost feels like a meeting of worlds.
Exactly,
it feels like he's looking at E.T.
Yeah, maybe that's,
It's completely speechless, but smiling in wonder. It's like he's asking himself, what is this? You know, but not frightened, almost fascinated.
No. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's also why I liked it. It's the complete fascination and curiosity that's still present.
In my introduction, I actually mentioned the word provocation. Do you agree with the term? I mean, I guess people will be, people watching it may refer to the film once they've seen it as a provocation.
I mean, I don't know if it's important if I agree. I mean, I don't have a problem if people would see this as a provocation. I mean, especially as a starting point, I think provocation in film is never it's a bad thing or not necessarily in any case. But of course, if it just stays with a provocation, then I think the film has failed, I would say. So I hope that maybe started from a provocation, there is more to it. That's of course to others to judge, but for me I think when the film develops, that at a certain point the provocation is replaced by different questions, I would say, in different themes.
And do you think that this film may lead people to have discussions about specific things? Do you expect it to have that type of resonance?
Probably, yeah. Like this, what you just mentioned, the presence of cameras and surveillance in society, probably it could open a discussion about it. But at the same time, yeah, for me, well, I think I didn't mention yet, but it was also... to a certain extent, this film, I would say, a way to subvert this contemporary documentary formula, which is something I should maybe elaborate on a little bit. Because,
sure, yeah.
Like, in my opinion, the vast majority of documentaries these days are, yeah, exploring or, in a bad case, exploiting extraordinary subjects, like be there famous singers, oppressed minorities, you know, it's always about the extraordinary, or most of the times. And with this film, I try to turn this a little bit around and to focus on ordinary people, like your neighbor, in that sense, that you wouldn't necessarily think of to make a film about. And I try to switch the, or to move the extraordinary aspect to the form or to the approach. So instead of a extraordinary or a ordinary film about extraordinary people, I tried to think to make an extraordinary film about ordinary people.
And playing with the form at the same time, because this is quite different from the traditional type of documentary filmmaking in the way that it has evolved and in the way in which it's prominent today, right?
Yeah, I hope so. But there was something, one of the reasons that I wanted to go on with this when I revisited the material, because I thought it had this this potential, maybe.
Right, yeah. Do you think we live in a golden age of documentary? I've been hearing that so much lately that I've never actually asked anybody, but I kind of just felt like ending our interview with that.
Golden age, yeah, it's golden age. I mean, in terms of quantity, I would say yes. In terms of quality, I don't know. I have to think about it.
Does it reach the standards of the 60s and 70s direct cinema, you know?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the good thing is, it's, you know, you could say it's much more democratic, and that's what I like. Everyone can take a camera or start to make a documentary, but at the same time, I think this counts for every business, I would say, but the amount of documentaries being produced these days, it's like a sublime experience. Like, it's completely overwhelming you. No one can even, you know, grasp or try to categorize them, because it's just too much, I would say. So that's something I would support. Like, let's think before we unleash something into the open. Like, what does it add to the existing flow flood, you could say, of documentaries?
Yeah. All right, Guido, thanks very much for joining us and talking with us today. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.